Picture this. You are standing in the absolute heart of central Idaho.
Right.
You are just totally surrounded by over 2.3 million acres of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness.
Which is just an unbelievable amount of land.
It really is. I mean, just to put the sheer massive scale of that into perspective for you, it is the largest contiguous wilderness area in the lower 48 states.
Yeah.
You're looking at deep, plunging river canyons that, actually rival the Grand Canyon in scale.
Oh,
You've
absolutely.
got these steep, jagged mountain ranges just pushing right up against the sky and endless, dense lodgepole pine forests.
But, the most defining characteristic of where you're standing right now isn't actually what you see,
Right.
it's what you hear. Or, well, I guess rather, it's what you don't hear.
Exactly. It is a landscape that is defined by absolute unmotorized silence.
Yeah.
Because under the 1964 Wilderness Act, these lands are legally meant to be untrammeled by man.
Untrammeled, yeah.
Yeah. No engines, no vehicles, just the sound of the wind moving through the canyons, the river rushing over the rocks, and, the wildlife.
And it is a profound level of quiet that is incredibly rare to find anywhere in the modern world.
It really is.
That silence, I mean, it isn't just an aesthetic preference for backpackers. It is written into the very legal definition of the space.
Right.
The architects of the Wilderness Act, they specifically wanted to preserve a few places on Earth where modern mechanization simply stops at the boundary line.
But on May 14th, 2026, that silence was officially broken.
Yeah, it was.
The U.S. Forest Service granted a really rare, highly controversial 3-year exemption.
And this is a huge deal.
It's massive. They are basically allowing commercial outfitters to take gas-powered chainsaws deep into the Frank Church Wilderness to clear, I think it's 542 miles of trails.
542. Right.
And we have a towering stack of sources in front of us today to figure out why this happened and how it came to this.
We really do.
We are looking at official U.S. Forest Service workbooks, really detailed legal proposals from outfitter guides, Freedom of Information Act requests filed by environmentalists.
Those FOIA requests are fascinating, by the
Oh,
way.
we will get to those. And we also have deeply personal volunteer blogs and some incredibly intense boots-on-the-ground debates from Reddit.
Yeah, the Reddit threads get pretty heated.
Our mission for this deep dive is to basically understand the mechanics behind this decision, the laws that are just completely colliding with each other here, and what this actually means for the future of American wilderness.
Right.
Okay, let's unpack this.
So, to really understand how a government agency reached the point of, basically overriding one of the most famous conservation laws in American history, we have to look at the physical reality on the ground right now.
This is not great.
No, it's really not. We reviewed the Forest Service's minimum requirements analysis framework.
They're called the MRAF, right?
Yeah, the MRAF. And the MRAF isn't just some basic, administrative checklist. It's a really rigid legal stress test.
Right.
It is specifically designed to force the agency to prove that every single non-motorized alternative has been completely, totally exhausted before a machine is ever allowed in.
And what the MRAF data, along with the reports from the Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association,
IOGA.
right, IOGA, what that data reveals is a forest ecosystem undergoing a massive violent transition.
Yeah, we are talking about decades of overlapping natural disasters here.
Right.
A warming climate has, fundamentally altered the biological mechanics of the forest.
Because it doesn't freeze the way it used to.
Exactly. Without deep, sustained winter freezes, populations of pine bark beetles have just exploded.
Wow.
And they are decimating vast swaths of lodgepole pine. So then those dead standing trees become this prime fuel for massive high-intensity
It's
wildfires.
just a chain reaction.
It really is. Once a fire rips through and burns the root systems and the soil, I mean, it only takes one severe windstorm to basically knock the whole forest down.
Right.
The result is what the Forest Service actually describes in their MRAF as, quote unquote, extraordinary levels of downed trees.
And, it's hard to conceptualize just how bad it is until you see the actual numbers.
Those are wild.
Because we aren't talking about, stepping over a log every couple of miles.
Not at all.
I was looking at the aerial helicopter survey the Forest Service conducted in late October of 2025.
Right.
They flew over a single 150-mile stretch of trail that the outfitters had flagged as critical.
Just one stretch.
Just one. And the researchers estimated that just in that 150-mile section, there were between 80,000 and 110,000 deadfall trees physically blocking the path.
I mean, the math on that is just staggering.
It really is.
You're looking at hundreds of massive, heavy logs per mile.
And you really see the human toll of those numbers when you look at the Reddit sources we polled.
Oh, yeah. The survival stories.
In the Rightahoe subreddit, local backpackers are trading legitimate, terrifying survival stories about trying to navigate these exact trails.
Yeah, I read some of those.
There's this one user, BunnyRabbit1202, who talked about climbing out of the Salmon River Canyon in the dead of summer.
Which is brutally hot.
Brutal. And because the trail was essentially gone, like just buried under thousands of logs, their progress slowed to an absolute crawl.
Right.
A spring they relied on for a water refill ended up being completely dry.
Oh, man.
And because they were moving so slowly over the deadfall, they ended up going over 8 hours in the alpine heat without water.
That is so dangerous.
They actually said the thirst scrambled their brain.
Wow.
Other users talk about trails being completely reclaimed by nature, forcing them to literally climb straight up steep canyon walls just to bypass avalanche debris piles that were made entirely of timber.
It's just an obstacle course.
But hold on a second. If the legal definition of wilderness is supposed to be, you know, untrammeled by man, doesn't going in to clear it completely violate the premise? Like, why not just let the forest reclaim it, even if it means a trail completely disappears and we can't hike there anymore?
This raises an important question, and it really strikes at the absolute core of wilderness philosophy.
Right.
Are these spaces preserved strictly for nature to exist without any human interference whatsoever? Or are they preserved so that humans can experience them in a primitive, unmechanized state?
Because if you can't get in.
Exactly, because if a trail disappears under 100,000 logs, public access essentially drops to zero.
Yeah.
That tension is exactly why trail maintenance has always existed in the Frank Church. But up until this exemption, it had to be done strictly under the rules of the 1964 Wilderness Act.
Meaning pure, grueling human muscle,
Yep.
no motors.
Exactly. For decades, the primary tools in the Frank Church have been the Pulaski,
Oh, right.
which is a specialized hand tool that combines an axe and an adze for chopping and digging dirt.
Yeah.
And then, of course, these massive two-person crosscut saws. These large saws are affectionately, or, well, perhaps begrudgingly, known as misery whips.
Misery whips. I mean, just calling a tool a misery whip tells you everything you need to know about how hard the work is.
Oh, absolutely.
But reading through these sources, you realize it's also an incredibly technical skill. Like, you don't just hack at a log.
No, not at all. It requires a really deep understanding of physics and timber mechanics.
Right.
A crosscut saw works on a pulling motion, not pushing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So two people have to rock back and forth in perfect rhythm, constantly reading the tension of the wood so the log doesn't pinch the blade,
Yeah.
while simultaneously clearing the sawdust, or what they call the kerf, from the cut.
Wow.
For some people, mastering that labor is deeply meaningful.
Yeah, we actually have a blog post here from the Selway Bitterroot Frank Church Foundation,
Right, the SBFC.
written by a college student and youth crew leader named Levi Armaturdy.
His perspective was fascinating.
His writing is so compelling. He describes the unique sound a well-sharpened crosscut saw makes. He calls it a song of abrasive metal on wood, like this winging sound that he lets himself be entirely absorbed by.
Yeah.
For him, this repetitive silent work is just a pure meditative experience.
It's a way of physically connecting to the ecosystem.
Exactly. And I loved reading his perspective because he even wrestles with the ethics of it, you know.
Right.
He asks himself, what right do I have to determine who lives or dies when he inevitably has to cut down living saplings just to clear a path around a massive fallen log?
Yeah, that's a tough dilemma.
But he reconciles it by believing that by opening the trail with traditional hand tools, more people will access the wilderness, fall in love with it, and ultimately be inspired to protect it.
It is a really beautiful sentiment, but I mean, the physical toll of that traditional method is immense.
It's unbelievable.
Levi actually notes the statistics for his crew's trip. It took 7 people 4 days, hiking 24 miles with 10,000 feet of elevation gain, just to clear 1.5 miles of trail and 51 trees.
I mean, let that sink in. 51 trees in 4 days with a crew of seven.
Yes.
Wow.
Now compare that back to the Forest Service aerial survey.
Right.
80,000 to 110,000 trees down on just 150-mile stretch.
It doesn't compute.
No. The volunteer groups like Levi's do incredible, vital work. But mathematically, human muscle just cannot keep pace with the sheer volume of deadfall generated by modern climate factors.
Right.
And to impartially report on the context provided in our sources here, this mathematical deficit is severely exacerbated by federal staffing shortages.
Right. The Missoula Current article dives into this.
It does. It outlines how recent Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, cuts under the Trump administration eliminated 250 new Forest Service employees in Montana alone.
Wow.
The mechanism of how this impacts the trails is pretty straightforward.
Right.
Trail maintenance traditionally relies heavily on large crews of young seasonal agency workers.
Yeah.
When you eliminate those paid agency positions, you basically lose the backbone of the workforce.
So you've got less people and more logs.
Exactly. So when you combine a drastically reduced paid workforce with an insurmountable climate-driven wall of timber, the traditional crosscut methods start to structurally fail.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Relying on handsaws to clear 110,000 trees with a slashed workforce, I mean, it's like trying to maintain the entire interstate highway system with a fleet of wheelbarrows.
That's a great analogy.
The tool simply does not match the scale of the infrastructure anymore. It's noble, it's quiet, but the system is collapsing under the weight.
Yeah.
So are we as a society romanticizing the extreme rustic labor of these crosscut saws at the cost of actually allowing the public to safely access their own public lands?
Well, that is the exact argument made by the commercial outfitters who operate in the Frank Church.
Right.
And it is the entire foundation of their chainsaw proposal.
Because they need to run their businesses.
Exactly. For them, this isn't just about preserving a pleasant, nostalgic backpacking trip. It's about their livelihoods, their businesses, and their legal right to operate on public lands. Eric Weiseth, the executive director of the Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association, he points out that almost half the trails in the wilderness are currently unusable.
Half of them.
Half. And if a trail remains blocked for too many seasons, the brush grows over, the tread washes out, and the road simply disappears.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
And reading through the IOGA proposal, I mean, they aren't just asking for a blanket permit to blindly run chainsaws everywhere.
No, no. The proposal was highly targeted and really data-driven.
Right.
They overlaid historical trail maps with satellite data from recent fires and beetle infestations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they broke the wilderness down by trail usage. They only requested chainsaw use on level 3 trails.
Which are the big ones, right?
Right. These are the arterials, the heavily used mainline trails that connect major river corridors. But only if at least 45% of the trail's mileage was heavily affected by deadfall.
Okay, so 45% for the big trails.
Yes. And for the lesser used level 1 trails, which are more like remote game trails or little spurs, they only requested chainsaws if the damage exceeded a massive 90% threshold.
Wow, 90%.
Yeah. So in total, they identified 542 miles of trail that met these extreme criteria.
But wait, I was reading through the text of the actual legislation, and there is a massive legal contradiction here that IOG is pointing to.
Oh, yes.
Because the 1964 Wilderness Act is a blanket ban on machines.
Right.
But the Frank Church Wilderness wasn't designated until later under the Central Idaho Wilderness Act of 1980.
Right. Public Law 96.312.
Exactly. And if you look at Section 5B of that 1980 Act, it contains a very specific mandate.
It really does.
It explicitly states that in administering this specific wilderness, the Secretary of Agriculture shall clear obstructions from all national forest trails within the wilderness on at least an annual basis to the maximum extent practicable.
That is the crucial legal twist right there.
Yeah.
Because the word shall is an incredibly strong binding word in administrative law.
It means you have to do it.
Exactly.
It's like having a broad constitutional amendment that strictly bans all motor vehicles in a country, but a later local zoning bylaw dictates that the city must pave the specific road to your house every single year.
Right. They contradict.
The Forest Service is totally trapped between the spirit of the overarching constitution, the 1964 Act, and the strict letter of the local bylaw, the 1980 Act.
Yeah.
So the outfitters are basically arguing that because the Forest Service is failing its 1980 mandate to keep trails clear annually, and because handsaws can no longer mathematically keep up, chainsaws are now the only practicable way left to fulfill the law. Right.
That is the exact legal tension the Forest Service used to justify the MRAF exemption.
Wow.
But conservationists view this legal interpretation as a profound threat.
Naturally.
For them, the 1964 Wilderness Act is the supreme guiding document. And no local addendum about trail clearing should ever override its core principle of unmechanized nature.
And the moment the Forest Service approved this 3-year chainsaw exemption, the conservation groups immediately mobilized to fight it.
Oh, yeah. We looked closely at the response from a group called Wilderness Watch.
Right.
On May 13th, 2026, the policy director and attorney, Dana Johnson, sent a deeply critical letter to the Forest Service Chief Tom Schultz.
I read that letter.
Their stance operates on two levels, really, philosophical and legal.
Right.
Philosophically, they argue that chainsaws represent a level of technological domination over the landscape that the Wilderness Act was specifically designed to prevent.
Interesting.
Hauling gas cans, bar oil, and screaming engines into the backcountry isn't about trail efficiency. It's about humans refusing to yield to nature's boundaries.
But this goes way beyond just a philosophical disagreement over the Frank Church, right?
Yes, it does.
Because Wilderness Watch filed a Freedom of Information Act request to see what the agency was discussing behind closed doors, and the emails they uncovered are a total bombshell.
The FOIA revelations basically fundamentally changed the scope of this entire story.
Right.
Wilderness Watch discovered internal Forest Service emails proving that this chainsaw approval in Idaho is not an isolated local incident.
This is wild.
The emails showed that the Forest Service actually hired an outside contractor to look at the feasibility of chainsaw use in wilderness areas on a national scale.
Nationwide.
Nationwide. Furthermore, the documents reveal that commercial outfitters in Wyoming are actively using this Idaho decision to push the agency to allow battery-operated chainsaws for trail maintenance in their own wilderness areas.
Which completely validates the conservationists' biggest fear.
Exactly.
I mean, if you grant an exemption in Idaho because of deadfall, then Wyoming wants battery-powered chainsaws because they're quieter. And suddenly the fundamental definition of wilderness is being rewritten nationwide.
That fear of the slippery slope is deeply rooted in how administrative law works. And there is a very relevant precedent right here in the Frank Church Wilderness.
Oh, right.
If you look at the article we sourced from High Country News, it details the 2015 dispute over the Golden Hand mining claim.
Oh, this was fascinating. Remind us how that grandfather clause worked.
So it comes down to the 1872 Mining Act.
Okay.
Which is a law designed to encourage Western expansion. And it predates the 1964 Wilderness Act by nearly a century.
Right.
Because a mining company held an active claim inside the Frank Church boundaries before it was designated as wilderness, those property rights were grandfathered in.
Wow.
The company argued they had a legal right to access their claim, and the Forest Service ultimately approved a plan allowing them to build a road and make hundreds of trips a year with bulldozers, dump trucks, and heavy drill rigs right into the heart of the pristine wilderness.
Bulldozers in a wilderness area.
Yes. So for conservationists, the mechanism is always the same. A legal loophole is exploited to bypass the Wilderness Act.
Right.
They view this chainsaw approval as another fatal crack in the armor. Every single exception, whether it's a bulldozer for a mine or a chainsaw for a trail, chips away at the legal integrity of the wilderness until it simply isn't wild anymore.
And it's like a leaky dam, right? Once you let a trickle of gas-powered engines through, eventually the whole wall of wilderness protection washes away.
That's their exact fear.
The precedent is terrifying if your ultimate goal is protecting the sanctity of these lands.
Yeah.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second.
Okay.
And I'm going to pull from our Reddit sources to do it.
Good.
Because it isn't just commercial outfitters who want these trails clear. It's everyday hardcore backpackers, too.
Right.
One user on Ridaho, named Food Tower, pointed out that navigating endless downed trees isn't just annoying, it makes it extremely easy to lose the trail completely.
Yeah, you get totally disoriented.
They argued that chainsaws are a quote-unquote low-harm necessity to ensure the trails actually serve their purpose of keeping hikers safely on a defined path.
Right.
And another user brought up the reality of forest fires.
This is a huge point.
If you are a mile deep into a canyon and trapped by a fast-moving fire, which, you know, happens constantly in the Frank Church, a block trail isn't an inconvenience, it's a death trap.
That's exactly.
So is Wilderness Watch being so ideologically purist about the sound of a motor that they are actively ignoring basic human safety and the reality of a changing climate?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we are truly seeing is two groups who both deeply love and value the wilderness, but who have fundamentally opposite definitions of what it means to actually save it.
Right.
Wilderness Watch believes you save the wilderness by fiercely protecting its character. The silence, the lack of mechanization, the strict adherence to the foundational law, even if the physical reality of climate change means the trails become totally impassable to humans.
Keep it wild at all costs.
Exactly. The outfitters and many safety-conscious backpackers believe you save the wilderness by keeping it accessible.
Right.
They argue that humans must be able to safely travel through it, witness its beauty, and advocate for its continued existence.
Yeah.
They look at the warming climate, the exploding insect populations killing the trees, the resulting millions of dead logs, and they basically say the old 1964 rules simply lack the mechanical capacity to handle the new reality.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener?
Yeah.
It means that the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, this massive 2.3 million acre crown jewel of American wildlands, is currently trapped.
It really is.
It is trapped between a rapidly changing climate that is throwing hundreds of thousands of dead trees across its paths and a foundational, beautifully poetic law that was designed to keep modern machinery out of the woods.
Yeah.
The Forest Service, squeezed by a 1980 legal mandate and a shrinking workforce, has decided that for the next 3 years at least, the only way forward is to fire up the chainsaws.
But, you know, there is one final highly critical nuance to this that we haven't touched on yet.
Oh.
And it's something for you to really mull over as you think about how we manage nature going forward.
Okay, what is it?
It comes from a very subtle expert observation by a Reddit user named ZealousIdealDish941.
Love the Reddit usernames.
They're the best. So they noted that simply logging out, which means rapidly cutting a tree out of the way with a chainsaw, is not the same thing as actual trail maintenance.
Right, because traditional trail crews do a lot more than just saw wood.
Exactly. When volunteer crews go in with traditional hand tools like Pulaski's, they move incredibly slowly.
Yeah.
And because they are moving slowly, they don't just cut logs. They rebuild the actual dirt tread of the trail.
Oh, wow.
They dig water bars and drainages to route rainwater off the path. They reinforce the delicate wetlands that the trail crosses.
So it's whole ecosystem care.
Right. If the Forest Service is rushing to get these trails, quote unquote, open by simply having commercial outfitters rapidly chainsaw logs out of the way so their pack trains can get through quickly, they might be entirely ignoring vital tread maintenance.
Wow. That completely shifts the perspective on this entire debate.
It does.
Because if you just quickly chainsaw a clear path through a logjam, but you ignore the dirt and the drainage underneath it, the next big rainstorm is going to wash that unmaintained trail right off the side of the mountain.
Precisely. Could the resulting erosion and sloughing from a hastily cleared, unmaintained trail ultimately destroy the very paths the chainsaws were brought in to save?
That is wild to think about.
Does the sheer speed and efficiency of a motorized chainsaw actually blind us to the careful, slow, holistic stewardship that a fragile wilderness ecosystem truly requires?
That is a fascinating question to leave on.
Yeah.
When you replace the slow, meditative, deeply physical rhythm of the misery whip with the hyper-efficient roar of a gas engine, you might be solving the immediate problem of a blocked path, but you might be losing the careful attention to detail that keeps the wilderness physically intact in the long run.
Absolutely.
We started this dup dive talking about the massive scale and the absolute silence of the Frank Church wilderness. The silence has been officially broken, but the ultimate question remains, what kind of wilderness will be left when the engines finally turn off?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. Keep questioning the world around you, and we will catch you next time.